marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org and ORML.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal show live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
Then he goes down smooth.
Good afternoon, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Wednesday, January 4th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. Glad to have you here.
I'll get you in both ears there, too. We're going to fix a whole bunch of stuff here in the studio. As you know, all week it's been the redesign of the Normal Network Studios, and I am so happy to announce that it's been redesigned in a lot of ways to help accommodate the return of the one, the only, the pirate, Ganja John. Thank you,
Rick. Arr, the pirate's here. Arr,
There's two buttons for your voice now.
That's right. I'm in stereo, man, because I can
do this now. I can go anywhere I want to go.
Ganja John is back from the Rose Bowl. Oregon Ducks, champions of the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, first Rose Bowl championship in 95 years.
Also joining us from the virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is my bestest friend ever, Cannabis Carrie.
That's the nicest introduction.
All the words make sense and everything. Carrie gives us our Hem headline. She's our senior news editor. What do we have in the news today, Carrie?
Well, if we get through it all, I've got a couple of stories for you. First, we're going to go over a Washington State poll. You know they're starting to ask voters how they're going to vote come November. Also, we're going to go to Mendocino to look at some cleanup efforts through volunteers there. We're also going to look at a study. It is Science Wednesday, so we're going to look at a study about middle-aged male drug users and how they do on cognitive tests. And also, Washington isn't the only state that gets to vote on legalization. Another state turned in a ton of signatures today.
You didn't pick the middle-aged drug user story just for me, did you?
I think they did that study just for you, actually. Your name was on it somewhere.
Unfortunately, in sadder news today, for those of you who missed the breaking news, Kentucky gubernatorial candidate and longtime hemp activist Gatewood Galbraith passed away today due to complications from tobacco smoking, ironically enough. Keith Stropp joins us at 45 past the hour to talk about his friend Gatewood Galbraith and remember his activism and his legacy. At half past the hour, we're going to speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine from SUNY Albany. He'll be taking your calls at 971-533-7111, and you can ask him questions about science, history, culture, anything you want to know about being a cannabis consumer. Dr. Mitch can probably help you out. We also got Wiz Colico in the studio as well, and he'll be bringing us an Ivy Island Hour live tonight at 8 o'clock Pacific, and 9 o'clock Pacific at Ganja John Show. So stick around, lots of stuff.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Maps.com. I run a restaurant. My job's outreach coordinator. I travel every month. I'm on the road and I can fast and quickly find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Maps.com. We know.
titled What You Can Do, just writes Norma. N-O-R-M-L.
1600 K Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. 2006. That's 1600 K Street Northwest, Washington, D.C. 2006.
Help Norma to then protect your rights.
Hey, this is Seth Cole from Team Green Adventure Seeds, TGAGenetics.com, and you're listening to The Normal Network.
Hi, I'm Michael West. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. So when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proofing cans. From smelling
this week, and the study was not small. The researchers from King's College in London looked at 8,992 men that used illicit drugs at age 42. For the research, they took a second look at that group when they all turned 50. What researchers found was that when given tests to determine cognitive functioning, the drug users fared a bit better than most. The study on all those participants found a positive association with past or current illicit drug use on cognitive functioning. They did look at drug users in general. The study asked about the use of 12 illicit drugs, but by far over 70% was marijuana. It was the most common substance that was used among the identified among the drug users in the study. The participants were from a UK national health study, and the cognition tests that they took were standard tests of memory and attention, along with other cognitive abilities. Overall, the study found no evidence that showed current or past drug use had a negative effect on mental performance when the drug users' data was lumped together. The surprising finding was that the drug users as a group tested higher on average, but the researchers said that the advantage was small and might reflect another finding, that people who use drugs generally have a higher education level than non-users. A small subset of the participants who said that they had been treated for drug use, which may suggest more of an addiction or very heavy use, did not fare as well cognitively at 50 years old. But researchers say the subset was too small to draw any meaningful conclusions. Researchers do caution that heavy or long-term use of any illicit drugs may still be bad for brain function. Past studies have found that marijuana and cocaine can cloud thinking, affect memory and attention span, but the current finding adds support that those effects may only be temporary.
As a middle-aged drug-using male, I'm very happy to hear about this study. Of course, it's not an endorsement to go out there and get blasted as much as you can to see how well you're going to do on the IQ test. But anytime we bring around the idea of recreational drug users, casual drug users, occasional drug users, however you want to frame it, I always just have two words for these people that talk about cognition. Carl Sagan. I mean, come on, the guy was a regular cannabis consumer and one of the most brilliant physicists this planet has ever produced. The guy was in charge of writing, supervising the writing of the golden disc that we sent out on the Voyager spacecraft to explain to alien civilizations what the human race was. You gotta smoke a little weed to get that deep, man.
And a new poll in Washington State shows that voters are evenly split about, anyway, on the question of legalizing marijuana for all adults. We told you that Washington State will have at least one legalization ballot measure come November, so the polling on this question among voters is just beginning and will probably continue throughout the election cycle. The poll published today was the Elway Research Poll that asked 411 randomly selected voters about legalization this way. Washington voters may be asked as well to vote on an initiative to legalize marijuana in Washington State, and as things stand today, how are you inclined to vote on that measure? 48% said they would vote yes, with 45% saying they would vote no. Now, the margin of error is 5 percentage points, which puts the result at a possible tie. Back in July, that Elway poll had a more general question about legalizing marijuana, and 54% of the voters expressed support then. The pollsters say the initiative sponsors should be concerned because typically, undecided voters of initiatives usually end up voting no. The poll showed that marijuana activists already know, that women voters are far less likely to support legalization. In this case, 52% of men said yes on the poll, but only 43% of women. And that younger voters are more supportive of legalization than older voters. 69% of those polled under 35 said yes to the question. The group that is putting the first legalization question on the ballot for 2012, New Approach Washington, said they aren't particularly worried about the poll. Allison Holcomb, the campaign director for New Approach Washington, thinks the results would have been better for legalization if they had included wording about the estimated $215 million in tax revenue that would be earmarked for health care and abuse prevention. She says that inclusion would have swayed some of those that are polled. She said the voters in her state care about the details. One of the details, some say the legalization bill I-205's driving under the influence provision that penalizes anyone caught with more than 5 nanograms of THC in their bloodstream with a DUI will be a problem with the vocal medical marijuana patients in the state.
Yeah, we've talked about this before, the 5 nanogram per milliliter DUID standard. Again, I don't think it is something that is worth tossing legalization out. It's awful, don't get me wrong. It's terrible that this thing is in the bill. But if it gets legalization passed, then we get to study marijuana. Then we get to actually study people who drive under the influence of marijuana. We get some real data to prove what we've been saying all along, that marijuana-using drivers aren't that big of a concern compared to even people on cell phones or eating fast food or with kids in the car. I mean, it's not something that helps you be a better driver. Nothing does other than, you know, being alert and you know, paying attention to what you're doing. But the fear-mongering that's come around the what about the stone drivers is way overblown. 5 nanograms per milliliter is not a scientific measure of anyone's impairment. That said, we have a chance to pass legalization. Legalization. It is time that we make that step, regardless of what roadblocks might be in our way, what impediments. It's not the most perfect legalization that we would want to get behind. I do wish we were seeing better polling numbers on this. I remember when the polling numbers for Prop 19 came out, we were all excited about it in the summertime when it was in the 58 and the 60% range in some demographics. And as we saw when it got time for the voting booth, after a few months of Stoners Against Legalization, after a few months of the Drug Czar and others in California campaigning against this, we saw the end result being 56.5% for Prop 19. Let's hope we turn out better in Washington and that with the passage of time and more education, more people come on to support this measure and we can finally get at least one U.S. state standing for freedom.
We've been reporting for years about the efforts of law enforcement to rid the Mendocino National Forest in California of illegal marijuana grow sites. The Mendocino National Forest Grow Site Reclamation Project is partly financed through funding sought by the Lake County Fish and Wildlife Advisory Committee and the High Sierra Volunteer Trail Crew. Abandoned marijuana grow sites on public lands cause devastation to local habitats. When law enforcement crews come in and raid a grow site, they remove the marijuana and the weapons, but do not have the manpower to clean up the grow sites that are often littered with trash, chemicals, and tools like irrigation tubing. The astronomical budgets that allow military-like raids for these grows has led to frustration by environmental groups that say not enough is being spent on restoring these sites. The Reclamation Project group led by Bruce Hilbach is now organizing planned cleanup operation powered by volunteers to reclaim the forest for hikers and recreationalists. The all-volunteer groups will be escorted by at least one law enforcement official at all times during cleanup. Now, they are taking volunteer safety very seriously. The plan is for the groups of volunteers to hike in with trash bags and the officer, clean up the debris left over from grow sites, and then leave the trash bags on site to be picked up later by the Mendocino National Forest Rangers. Many of the site's trash bags will have to be picked up by helicopter. Now, they plan on beginning volunteers of varied physical strength and ability. So they are encouraging anyone who wants to help to contact them, not just people who are able to hike up mountains. So if you are in the area, you can email Mr. Hilbach with your phone number contact to get involved. It's BEHILBACHB@yahoo.com. We'll put that up on our website.
All right. Let's hear from those folks in Mendocino, Canada that are doing their part to make their place a better place to live, their county a better place to live. This is, you know, what is going to help us as cannabis consumers is to continue to integrate with the rest of society and to show people that we can, that marijuana smoking is just a small part of our life. We care about a lot of other things. We care about clean forests. We care about clean air. We care about our society. And by doing things like this, we help push the ball forward and making it so people can't dislike potheads. And something Rick Steves always said is just be the kind of cannabis consumer that people can't help but like, and you'll do so much more for getting marijuana legalized than almost any rally.
And not to be outdone by Washington State, Colorado marijuana activists turned in over 30 heavy boxes of petition signatures today to the Colorado Secretary of State. It is nearly the last step in the long process of a citizen initiative to make it to the ballot. Now they just need about 86,000 signatures out of the 160,000 that they turned in to be validated. Brian Vicente, one of the supporters of the campaign to regulate marijuana like alcohol, said he was overwhelmed with the support that they had received in the effort so far. If passed, the initiative would allow those in the state over 21 to buy and possess up to an ounce of usable marijuana. People would also be able to grow 6 marijuana plants in their homes. If passed, the WORDY initiative would be set up like a regulation system that's already in place for commercial marijuana growers and sellers of medical marijuana. That would be pretty similar in that model that the state has already been regulating through legislation. And just like medical marijuana, though, communities would still be allowed to ban marijuana-selling shops. As soon as those signatures are counted and verified, the question will be in the hands of the voters come November.
Well, that's great. We got Washington State turning in almost, 150% of the signatures they needed. Colorado now turning in, 200% or so. So, you know,
over 200.
Yeah, over 200. So people are really doing the due diligence in those two states by gathering together and banding behind one initiative and putting all the efforts behind that. Or at least in these cases, getting off the ball so early, you know, getting their start so early that they manage to, you know, lap the competition. I know in Colorado and Washington, there's a couple of other groups that want to get legalization on the ballot, but they're still waiting. They're still, you know, in the preliminary stages. I hope that we can all get behind one initiative in Oregon. We can all get behind one initiative in California, and hopefully we'll be seeing something happening in Massachusetts or New Hampshire as well to help legalize in any of those states. Now, this Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol Act, you can find out more about it if you're in Colorado or if you're just curious about the act. It's at regulatemarijuana.org, and what it will do, basically 3 points. It makes the personal use, possession, and limited home growing of marijuana legal for adults 21 years of age or older. And again, legal. Folks, there's so much when you make this legal that changes. It changes the whole game. We're not arguing from the point of view of being criminals anymore. We're arguing from the point of view of being substance consumers like people that drink alcohol or smoke tobacco, and it makes the rest of our jobs so much easier. Legal. It also kills the probable cause that officers have for the smell of marijuana, or if they happen to find a baggie in your pants, because that's legal. They won't be able to take that and use that as a pretext to go on and harass you further. Now, another point of the Regulate Marijuana Like Alcohol establishes a system in which marijuana is regulated and taxed similarly to alcohol. Now, some of the people that are opposed to some of these regulate notions think that the federal government's just going to come in and overturn that anyway, but I think it's a fight we should start having now. I think it's 420.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man, a reefer man? If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that gives us these precious rights. Treat law enforcement with respect, and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search or seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Special guest Bunny Whaler and Kimana Marley. So we're going to play this one, Lessons in My Life, from that legend CD. This is Andrew Tosh. Starbase designs are available from mid-Oregon to last year in your view. For locations, call 541-78-GLASS. That's 541-78-4527.
Six answers on the board. Name something that gets passed around.
Yes.
A joint.
A joint.
This is Normal Show Live, where a joint is always the right answer.
So exciting here in the studio with all the new setup and coming through loud as a bell. So glad to hear it. Folks, if you want to get in on the conversation here, this is your chance to ask one of America's most educated, up-to-date, cutting-edge researchers on marijuana. So get your questions ready on science, on health, on culture, on history. And Dr. Mitch, I assure you, will knock it out of the park. We've already got one person calling in. So before we get to that, though, let me put them... Let's take the call, Dr. Mitch. I'm just excited that we got so many people calling in. Hello, 541. We're on the air with Dr. Mitch Earlybine. What's your question?
Hey, Rob. This is Yellow on a Cake.
Hello.
Hey, I just was wondering if we could ask Dr. Mitch if he can discuss the differences between alcoholic dementia and Alzheimer's dementia, other than the name. And does he think the cannabis would be a good drug to take if it might slow down the progression of dementia?
All right, great question, Dr. Mitch.
The bottom line, Alzheimer's dementia and alcoholic dementia have slightly different symptoms, but obviously alcoholic dementia is linked to large consumption of alcohol. Alzheimer's dementia actually can't be diagnosed without getting a close look at the brain and finding these tangles in certain parts that are obviously part of what's interfering with the nerve transmission. It looks like the cannabinoids may actually help at least minimize the growth of some of those outrageous tangles, and the cannabinoids are, you know, well known for their antioxidant effects, and these do seem to form because of oxidation, so there's some compelling animal evidence on that. It doesn't guarantee that, you know, weekly stoners are going to never get Alzheimer's, but it's certainly suggested as far as that stuff is concerned. And then the hope that if folks would, you know, turn to cannabis rather than binge drinking as sort of a prevention of not only alcohol-related dementia but a lot of liver disorders would also be helpful, because a lot of brain dysfunction does seem to come from metabolites from alcohol that don't really get completely broken down by the liver, and it's really hard on your liver anyway. So all in all, this is a great way to improve your health, turning from relatively toxic substance to genuinely
innocuous. You know, Kerry reported in the news at the top of the hour about this study on middle-aged drug-using males and not showing declines in cognitive function. Now, we talk about this with Alzheimer's. We've done other stories about this. It almost seems as if for all the prohibitionist claims of marijuana making you stupid, marijuana actually seems to be protective of the brain in a lot of ways.
That's definitely the case, and Kerry's covered this well. I want to emphasize that study was not just a simple mini mental state type exam. These were specific cognitive tests that are very, very sensitive, and the sample was huge. So, I mean, if there was something there, believe me, they would have found it, and they did not. And I think that this is really encouraging, but also,
Rich Early Wine, and the phone lines are live here at 7 p.m. Eastern, 7:30-ish Eastern. So if you're listening on a replay, don't call in now. But the phone number is 971-533-7111. And we have a report in the normal weekly news advisory coming out. Paul Armentano, our deputy director, posted this one. And the headline is, wider use of cannabis therapy could reduce prescription drug deaths. Can you tell us a bit about the studies behind this and the conclusion?
Well, Greg Carter, who, you know, helped me on a number of different studies and who's, you know, been a real friend of Normal for years and years, has a lot of his work cited here. And I think it's important to understand that between 1999 and 2006, about 65,000 people died from opioid analgesic overdose, meaning basically they were just taking the drugs that they thought they were supposed to take for pain and ended up literally dead. Now, obviously, this is something we want to avoid. The opiates are essentially unnecessary in some cases if cannabis is used for pain, and can certainly be reduced when cannabis is used as an adjunct for pain. We've seen this in really interesting, you know, reports from individuals for literally decades, but we've also seen cannabis has wonderful analgesic effects even in the lab. So we've got controlled sources of pain in the lab. Even smoked cannabis, vaporized cannabis can definitely do it. There's an inverted U on a dosage, so you have to have the right amount. You know, a little too little doesn't quite do it. Too much actually doesn't do it either, but it's that nice baby bear little dabble do
you approach. The Goldilocks dose.
Exactly. And then this is going to essentially not only save us money because these opiate drugs can be expensive, but actual health because the side effects of the opiate drugs are uncomfortable and not often easily discussed, but things like constipation, which is really hard if your pain is from, say, stomach surgery. Mm-hmm. And then, in general, you develop tolerance to them very rapidly, so you either have to increase the dose and then have even more of these negative side effects with less pain reduction, or essentially risk a lethal overdose as things go up, or just not, you know, have it treated as well. With cannabis, we don't see the same rapid development of tolerance, particularly when we're painting and using these medium doses, and infinitely cheaper. So there's a chance for, you know, the whole country to benefit as recreation model could turn to something that's, you know, literally a dollar a dose instead of $5.
Yeah, for all the talk we hear about, we got to reduce health care costs. Hello, we have a plan. Hello, it grows in the sun. Oh, Dr. Mitch, we could talk about that all day, but I wanted to take advantage of the most perfect segue ever offered. You were talking about opioids and constipation. We have a question from our chat room who wanted to remain anonymous, which I can understand. The question is, what is the effect of smoking weed on bowel movements? Why would THC affect that? Sometimes I think smoking makes me have a bowel movement. And my dog loves marijuana, but the few times he raided an ashtray, he pooped in the house. Any correlation?
It turns out the CB2 receptors, so not the standard CB1 that we're usually talking about with THC, but the CB2 receptors are pretty common in the gastrointestinal tract and some CB1 receptors as well. It's interesting because it may not be just THC. Cannabidiol may be involved and some of the cannabinoids we don't hear so much about. There's 60-plus of them, and we haven't experimented with all of them. But that does seem to be the case that these are stimulated. And then some of the data we have on irritable bowel. So it sounds odd, but in fact, folks with irritable bowel respond very well to medical cannabis at appropriate doses. And it may actually be a thing where it returns homeostasis. So if you need to have one, you get it from this. If you are having too many, this may actually decrease irritation and make it so that things firm up, so to speak.
We're speaking with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, and if you don't get a chance to get your question on today's segment, you can join us next week. We talk with Dr. Mitch every Wednesday at 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. Also, you can email at 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And, you know, speaking of man's best friend, Lively Lieber has a question. Is there any reason I should not use a cannabis salve on my dog's skin irritations?
I'm not a veterinarian, but nothing really comes to mind. In fact, as a first line of defense, these go well. There are certain, you know, severe irritations where it may be less effective than some.
question from Washington State. There's activists in Washington State that are currently trying to get attention deficit disorder, ADHD and ADD, either one. I think we're talking ADD there in this case, though, attention deficit disorder. And the question here asks, I have ADD, and I'm interested if there's any research on ADD and cannabis.
As it turns out, there's not a lot of stuff published. My student, Joseph DeLeo, and I have just gathered some data from folks on the Mono listserv, and there are definitely plenty of folks who claim it really does help their symptoms. In particular, some of the more distractibility-related and impulsivity-related symptoms. I'm uncertain if this is absolutely true, but there tends to be a subset of folks who really support the sativa strains more than the other ones. Obviously, if it's just a sedation in general, we don't really want to rely on that so much as something that could actually improve concentration. Unfortunately, we haven't done this in the lab. There are great tasks that would be superb for this, but the few people who have, the rights from the DEA to go ahead and administer cannabis in the lab have not been able to get the funding to make this happen.
And you know, if we can get Washington State to legalize cannabis in 2012, perhaps that starts to open some doorways for people to do this bit of research. Although, you know, these governors in Washington and Connecticut and Rhode Island who've now petitioned the government for moving cannabis to Schedule 2, that's their primary reason for wanting to do so, is to get that research. But I was wondering, Dr. Mitch, how much easier does that really make it? I mean, isn't it still difficult to do research on Schedule 2 drugs?
It's still pretty grueling, and the red tape is pretty expensive, but at least you've got a chance. It's just there are literally a countable number of labs that are allowed to administer, so it'd be a huge help.
Okay. Well, we speak with, like I said, we speak with Dr. Mitch Earlywine every Wednesday here in our Cannabis Science segment. And at the top of the segment, we usually give Dr. Mitch the opportunity to tell us what's coming around the bend, the latest stories or latest scientific studies we need to know about. We got the call right off at the top, so I didn't get the chance to ask that. Do you have any new information or studies we need to know about?
It turns out a new study is discussing how zinc can interfere with drug tests, and I'm always for interfering with urine screens. And the ELISA test does seem to be fooled, if you will, when someone has used cannabis at a relatively infrequent and low dosage, and they take 200 milligrams of zinc supplemented. It only seems to last for 12 to 18 hours, and so far it's only been proven in, looks like, four subjects. But I find this incredibly encouraging, and I just want to really let the community know that, sure, you're going to need a giant gallon of water all the time if you've got a drug test coming up, but 200 milligrams of zinc is awful cheap. By all means, go ahead and give that a shot as well.
All right, that's great stuff to hear. Thank you, Dr. Mitch, for that. We'll keep our eye open for any more developments on the zinc and drug tests issue. Very interesting. Thank you, Dr. Mitch, and we'll talk to you next week.
Take care.
All right, we'll come back. Normal Smith Stop remembers Gateway Calvin.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation. This is Normal Show Live.
No matter what you call it, it's a huge part of popular culture.
When you're that geek,
you don't need weed school. You just need a copy of the new book, Pop Culture, the A to Z Guide to Stoner Language of Life. Even if you never smoked marijuana,
I know it is marijuana.
Don't think you smoke marijuana.
The effects of marijuana prohibition are felt by all Americans in every walk of life, regardless of race, creed, color, religion, social status, wealth,
gender, sexual orientation, or even one's use or non-use of marijuana. As the marijuana smokers lobby, Normal hears the stories of these average Americans and brings them to the attention of our policymakers and our fellow citizens in this segment we call Normal Newsmakers.
Spoke to Gatewood Galbraith on December 3rd, 2010, the episode of Normal Show Live, and we're going to be replaying that interview in Hour 2 here in our Toker Talk Radio. Of course, he was beloved by the cannabis community for his quick wit and some of his funny sayings. He spoke at the Seattle Hemp Fest last year. That's where I got to see him and book him.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the 2010 one. Did he make 2011?
Oh, the one we didn't make yet.
Right, right, the 2010 one, and I've got a picture of that up on the blog at stash.normal.org. I always liked his little saying, because I've got my little, the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. Well, his was, he'll never stop fighting the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, transnational, corporate, fascist, elite bastards. And he was always running for governor, and according to, it seems like, you know, every time I looked up, he was running for governor, and when I did
it, I think he did it five times.
I did the interview with him, and I kind of did a faux pas. I think in the interview I'd said something like, well, you had once run for governor, and he said, once?
Important
was inspired. And according to the coroner, the Fayette County coroner, Gary Ginn, he was found at home, and they're saying that he'd been sick for about a week with cold-like symptoms complicated by chronic asthma and emphysema. He was a heavy smoker of cigarettes, and that's something that I think is kind of a shame in this story, is that somebody who was such a longtime crusader for freeing marijuana would succumb to the legal drug.
Well, in some ways, it's typical of Kentucky. It's his region of the country. Gatewood reflected the people he grew up with and lived with, and there are a lot of tobacco smokers still there. That was such a major industry for a long, long time. And so, in some ways, I feel sad about that, too. It's like, oh, geez, it's like, I feel bad that he might have died because he was a tobacco smoker. But I think it was important to him, probably, that he had the right to make that decision himself. I smoked tobacco in different parts of my life, but I quit. And even after a couple times when it didn't stick, it finally stopped. And I haven't smoked a cigarette in, I don't know, 30 or 40 years or something. But I understand those people who still do that. And I'm sorry if it leads to their early death. And in his case, that very well may be the case.
When you think of the legacy of Gatewood Galbraith, what are some of the events or stunts that he pulled or presentations that he gave? Are there any that stand out to you in your memory?
Well, I think one of the ones I was most proud of him was with Woody Harrelson. When Woody went down there, I forget the year now, and they planted the seed, and Woody got arrested and stuff. I think Gatewood was with him then. And as I say, I think any time when Willie was willing to go off the road and to go down to Kentucky and, do a campaign appearance with Gatewood, that's so important for the legalization movement overall, that those are all important. I wish I would have been involved when he was on the normal board, because I suspect he must have been a force there. But it was during those years when I was actually away from normal. I was working for the criminal defense lawyers and in ACDL. So I don't know the details, but I mean, certainly there are people who do. I'm very proud that he was on the normal board at some point, and he was always, even in the last few years, there was about a year or two ago, someone wrote something that suggested that he was angry at normal, or there had been some falling out. I got a call or two, and I said at the time, that's silly, because I went back and looked at my email, and we've traded an email every few months for the last few years, and it's always been friendly. And he's a lovely man. I greatly admire him, and I think he really enjoyed his time at Normal and appreciated Normal. So whatever that rumor was for a while, it simply was not true. He was a wonderful man. I'm delighted that we were part of his life.
Yeah, and he did so much for all of us. And, you know, standing up in a place like Kentucky, you know, I'm out here in Portland, Oregon. It's not exactly like pot leaves or something you don't see every day, you know.
You're right, by the way. It's one thing when you're in Washington, D.C., like I am, or Falls Church, Virginia, where unless you're pretty obvious, you know, nobody's going to know the difference and who gives a shit. But it's different, I think, in some of those southern states. And certainly, Kentucky is one of those. But, you know, as I say, even the politicians who have to hew the line in Kentucky, they all, as they got to know him, liked him and appreciated what he was doing. He stood for principle. They wish they could have done that. So we should be proud that one of ours was willing to make legalization of cannabis his the centerpiece of his life, I think.
Yeah.
And he was a we were lucky to have a champion of his talent.
Yeah, exactly. Well spoken. Let's end on a more upbeat, positive note here, you know, because I know Gatewood was fighting for legalization his whole life, and you've been fighting for it your whole adult life. Let's talk about 2012 and how we're moving forward with the legalization battle. Are you excited about this election year?
Well, I mean, I'm not excited in the sense that I recognize that I think progressives are kind of on the decline of being defensive, and the conservatives seem to be on the move. On the other hand, and we're all disappointed legalization of marijuana, separate from the bigger political scheme that we don't really control. I think within 5 years, we will win this issue almost regardless of what any of us do, simply because we outlive the bastards. In real terms, people my age, Gainwood was 4 years younger than me, so people my age and younger who were dying and stepping aside, most of whom are not our friends, are being replaced by people that, of course, are our friends, whether they smoke or not.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to win this issue, and it almost is independent of the political winds that may be blowing in the country otherwise, because generationally, we will win this issue because we will outlive our opponents.
Absolutely. And
I don't think that's so bad. I hope that doesn't sound sad. My own sense is that's a positive thing. Look, I remember when people were horrified. We can do it and not worry about the consequences. We're almost home.
Yeah, we're almost there, and it's going to get better and better every year. Thank you, Keith Strop, for the remembrance of Gatewood Galbraith, and we will never stop fighting the petrochemical, pharmaceutical, military, industrial, transnational, corporate, fascist, elite bastards, will we?
You're right.
Thanks, Keith. Good night to you, and Happy New Year. All right, folks, stick around in Toker Talk Radio Hour 2. We are going to take your calls at 971-533-7111. And we're going to play that interview from 2010 that I did with Gatewood Galbraith. Stick around. You're listening to the Normal Network. Coming up later tonight at 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, check out Pirate Island Hour Live with Luis Colico. And High Times Free Weed is coming up in a couple hours. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. Seed, plant it, grow it, dry it, roll it, smoke it, and it goes down smoother.